Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again from our inaugural broadcast at the Jerome L. Green Performance Space. If you're in Lower Manhattan, come on by. You can look right in the window and see us at 160 Varick Street at the corner of Charlton, just below Houston Street. It's not raining that hard. And happy Cinco de Mayo. It may not be the most important Mexican holiday, but it's probably the best known to non-Mexicans in the New York area. So we thought, since we were given May 5th as our inaugural show, that we would open this space as a kind of democracy's living room to a larger group of prominent Mexican New Yorkers than we could fit in our regular studio upstairs. And we had no idea when we planned this months ago that the flu would break out, and that as we were gathering here today, Mexico and New York City would be in the headlines as the epicenters of this disease, however serious or not it actually turns out to be. We know it has turned out to be a serious media obsession, if nothing else. So we'll talk about that and many other things that are Mexican New York right now with this all-star lineup of 9 guests all sitting together on the north side of the green space. Zarella Martinez, owner of Zarella's Restaurant at 2nd Avenue and 50th Street in Manhattan, Zarella. Daniel Yaquez, artistic director of Capulli Danza Mexicana. Maria Hinojosa, senior correspondent for Now on PBS and host and managing editor of Latino USA on public radio. Dr. Guillermo Perez Perez, infectious disease professor at NYU. Angelo Cabrera, founder of MASA, the Mexican-American Students Alliance. Brother Joel Magallan, the Jesuit founder and executive director of the Asociación Tepeyac, an immigration services organization, and WNYC news reporter Cindy Rodriguez. That's what she looks like. And finally, people are standing up to look over and see what Cindy looks like. And Ambassador Ruben Beltran, Mexico's Consul General in New York. Ambassador, nice to see you again. And Virginia Ramirez, a broadcast journalism student at Brooklyn College. She does communications work for the Mexican New York group Casa Puebla, the organization that postponed Sunday Cinco de Mayo celebration in Flushing Meadows Corona Park because of the flu outbreak. And wow, it is so cool that you all came. Thank you for taking this Cinco de Mayo occasion to help us open the green space. We hope this experiment today will establish this space as democracy's living room in Lower Manhattan, among the many things that WNYC hopes to do here. Virginia, why did Casa Pueblo call off Sunday's Cinco de Mayo festival in Flushing? Just very briefly, I don't want to dwell on this topic really, but there was no evidence that any Mexicans in New York even had this flu.
We didn't want to take the chance. As you may know, our festival has been celebrating in Flushing Meadows Corona Park for the past 8 years, and we drew about 800,000 people. Although all the performers and singers were coming from United States because they were on tour and most of them were local artists, we cannot control the flow of people who came as audience, as public, and we didn't want to take the chance and put our community in danger.
Dr. Perez, this may be heresy, but this is all still a mystery to me. I'm not even fully convinced that it started in Mexico. No Mexicans seem to have brought it back to New York, and plane loads of people travel back and forth every day, Mexicans and Mexican-Americans. They're the most common travelers to Mexico. It's only these non-Mexican kids from St. Francis Prep School in Queens. How does that make any sense?
Well, there has been really a puzzle where exactly that started, and however, a lot of people has been indicated that it's in Mexico, and actually, we in NYU Land Hall School, we decided to look in is exactly using all the information that the Mexican government has, and we're looking into the epidemiological surveillance, and we found that indeed the number of cases of influenza, I'm not talking about swine influenza, just influenza, as a preliminary cases has been doubled since the second week of February in Mexico. And that information is available from the Mexican government.
So something is happening.
Something is somebody who is doing surveillance and go to whatever is available already for the Mexican government can be detected that something was going on already in the second week of February and has been continued until the week 16, who was the last week of April. And then up to now, almost all the cases who has been linked with swine influenza or the H1N1 that has been named now has been all associated with Mexicans' travel to some of those places, either in Madrid, whether it's here, in or people who came from some other countries going to Mexico,
there.
And then they get it.
All right. Maria Hinojosa, and people know what you look like. Did you see the Times article today about the stigma from the flu attaching itself to Mexicans way beyond the risk of any disease? You think that's an issue?
I know it's an issue, Brian, and I didn't have to read the New York Times today on Tuesday to know that this was an issue, because already on Saturday, on Friday, I had a friend, somebody who I know very well, who is a domestic worker who lives in Spanish Harlem, who told me that twice in one day, twice in the span of 9 o'clock in the morning to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, she was hassled by groups of women who said, go ahead, tell them that you're sick. Then she said she got on the bus, and she was hassled again on the bus, and then she saw a group of women physically push a Mexican man away. So the reality is that this is compounded over something that you know very well, which is a growing anti-immigrant, anti-undocumented immigrant, and specifically anti-Mexican immigrant sentiment that many people across the country, here in New York, and certainly in centers of the media have been pointing to.
And Zarella, we knew it together last week on this program when you came on with me by phone from the restaurant, and you told me business was down for the apparent fear of eating Mexican food. Has the hysteria calmed down to where that's not a problem?
Yeah, because you totally diffused it. You know, you handled it in such a beautiful way that you really helped the restaurant business by saying, you know, come on, you know, there's really no connection between a Mexican restaurant and the flu. So I think, yes, by Wednesday we're packed, thanks to you.
Well, thank you for saying so. Cindy Rodriguez, you've lived in San Antonio and here.
Yes, that's correct, Brian.
Is there a difference between being a Mexican-American in San Antonio and a Mexican-American in New York?
Well, they're very different populations. You know, in San Antonio, it's a very much older population. My parents were born in San Antonio. My grandparents on my father's side were born in San Antonio. On my mother's side, they came from Mexico. So it also is one of the, I think there, Los Angeles maybe as well, has, if not as many whites, may surpass the white population. So it's also a very assimilated population. In New York City, the Mexican population is very new. I think 75% of the Mexican population came to New York in 1990 or later.
Angela, what's the buzz in Mexican New York these days? I know that's a general question, but does anything jump to mind? What's the bochinche on the street? Is it swine flu? Is it drug wars? Is it Obama? Or this is just what the press does? What are people talking about?
Well, there is, you know, yes to also saying and making a reference. I mean, there has an ongoing sentiment, anti-sentiment with the Mexican community. And you know, just recently, someone, a politician, Debsy Perry, who, you know, Huffington Post, she called Mexicans bandidos who were bringing the flu. So there is, you know, that kind of sentiments, and it really hurts because, you know, when you work with young kids and that little child doesn't want to go to school because, you know, he's going to be bullying or she's going to be bullying, and she looking up to, you know, persons like her, who is her role models, someone who's going to defend her rights as women issues, who's going to defend the Women's Commission, and saying those kind of words. I mean, that child is really in between walls of not wanting to go to school because you know, some kids might not want to come near to them, or some might say, you know, stay away from me, you're Mexican. And, you know, this is something that it really, really is hurting the community.
Maria?
You know, the reality, Brian, is that, you know, while people talk about this, again, in the media or such, this, for people who everyone on this panel knows, and for New Yorkers, actually, if they would realize that the Mexican population is so close to them, this has very real human consequences. And for me, it's kind of like, wow, 11 years ago, on this day, I gave birth to a little girl who was born on 17th Street. And at this time, in 2009, I'm having to think about talking to my kids about how they have to be prepared to defend their paisanos. My kids go to school on the Upper West Side. They're not going to be hassled. But they'll hear things from other kids. And their role is, as mi compañero just said, to protect. And that's how all of us here, you know, suddenly we're having to protect the lives of Mexicanos in New York City. It's crazy.
Brother Joel, some stats for our listeners out there who may not know them. Mexicans are the fastest growing immigrant group in New York these days. 500,000 or more could be counted in next year's census. The number of Mexican babies being born in the city right now is more than any other immigrant group, recently surpassing Dominicans. Why do Mexicans come here? It's so far from home, and it's so much colder than, say, San Antonio.
Probably Mexicans knew that New York City is the greatest city in the world, and they know that we have a lot of people who are coming here to enjoy the diversity in New York. Basically, one of the things why the Mexicans came, they were, and the first time they were in Los Angeles, and then they moved to New York because they thought that even the Mexicans were discriminating Mexicans in Los Angeles. But now they think that New York is the best city for them, and we are growing a lot now.
You wanted to get
in? Yes, I want just to say two things. One is I used to live in Denver, and then I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, in the deep south, working at Mandeville. And the first time that I moved there, I don't have an idea where I was going. So I look into the book, and it was listed 3,000 Spanish speakers for the whole state. By the time that I left in 2000, there were more than 100,000 Mexicans living in Nashville, Tennessee. Now, that this is one, and one of the reasons is economy. Actually, a lot of Mexicans moved to the south, to Mississippi, to Atlanta, to build of the Olympics installation, etc. And the other is also what has been said about New York. There is a strong communication, and people from Puebla has been brought all his family here, and that has been created this boom of Mexican in New York.
Anyone else? Yeah, go ahead, Angelo.
Well, I mean, it's also, seeing as New York, one of the most friendly states, and, you know, where pretty much kind of sanctuary where, you know, we have passed laws that provides the right for education for those who are undocumented students. So Mexicans do see New York as more friendly, and also for economical reasons. You know, there is a high demand for services, so Mexicans, that's why I came here.
Zorella?
It's not that we're just involved in service, but a lot of Mexican-Americans are very entrepreneurial. And you go to places like Passaic, you go up to Sunset Park. I mean, they have built up this area as they were just really, really in a bad position. And now they're vital communities and very successful because of Mexican businesses.
Ambassador Beltran?
Yes, thank you very much. First of all, I cannot avoid the congratulations on the green space, as we call it in Mexico. This is maybe the green plaza, so thank you very much. Congratulations. Y feliz Cinco de Mayo, everybody. I would like... This sentiment of the Mexicans my colleagues were referring to as not seeing New York as a welcoming space, does drawing them, inviting them to join New York is not in a vacuum. On one hand, New York recognizes itself as maybe the most diverse city in the world. And although acknowledging the events that were commented by my colleagues, Maria and others, very regrettable events, one should also establish a difference between the policy of the city. And no doubt the New York Bloomberg administration, New York policy is very welcoming and acknowledging the diversity and embracing the diversity. So that should be established, particularly if you take into comparison what's happening in other parts of the world, what happened in China, for instance, with the Mexicans there.
Can I ask the panel, journalists are exempt from answering this question if you don't want to. Is the Bloomberg administration doing a good job by Mexican New York? Yes?
I think we have the executive Joel. Order 41, which is kind of a the order to welcome everybody here. And police officers are not like immigration officers. And we don't have questions about what is your social security number, what is your are you resident or you are legally here, whatever. So I think this is a very welcome city because the executive order 41 is kind of the order to welcome everybody. And so this is coming from the mayor. And we also have other things like languages for everybody. It's not the welcoming just for the Mexicans. It's for everybody here.
Maria Hinojosa?
I'm not sure, Brian, if you covered the Shenandoah County decision that came down last week in the hate crime there. So for people who realize how close we are, I mean, on the one hand, you can have undocumented Mexican immigrants whose first language is not Spanish walking along Broadway. They're speaking Zapotec or Nahuatl. On the other hand, you can have urban rockeros, you know, who grew up listening to Led Zeppelin in Mexico City and now live in El Barrio. But very close to us in Shenandoah County, Pennsylvania, there was a hate crime where a Mexicano was walking with his white girlfriend, and because of that, they beat him, a group of teenagers beat him to a pulp, beating his head until his brains came out. All of them, last week, just a few hours from here, were found not guilty, only guilty of the lesser charges. And in the courtroom, when that was announced, there was a crowd of cheers and applause. That's the country that we live in, and the area that encompasses all of us. So I bring it back to, you know, this is a New York show. What is it that we as New Yorkers can, should do in relation to this reality?
And who wants to answer that question? What should we do in relation to this reality? Virginia Ramirez, how about on the Brooklyn College campus? What should we do?
Yeah, I want to jump on that. I think one of the biggest needs, not only among the community, but among humans in general, is to respect and not to like point the finger, well, you are the ones who brought, let's go back to the swine flu or the H1N1 virus. We're also been suffering because of that. I mean, like, we haven't had any Mexican case in New York, but we have family there, and we are worried about them. We also deserve respect. And I also want to make clear that a lot of Mexicans, not all of Mexicans living in the United States are undocumented. Not all of them are, as people think, they just come here to take other people's jobs. They are actually going to school. They're building, as Arela said before, they're entrepreneurs working, so we're also trying to make a living and work.
Daniel Jaquez from the Capuli Danza Mexicana.
I think part of solving the problem is also like coming out of the closet. We just come back from a tour in Tennessee, as a matter of fact. We spent 5 weeks there at a festival performing Mexican dances, and we had an average about maybe over 1,000, 1,500 audience members each day, 6 days a week. It was pretty amazing. But I encouraged our group to come out and talk to the people, and there were disturbing conversations, mostly because of ignorance, race, because of not knowing what's going on or who we are. They didn't know that I was a Mexican because I have blue eyes. They didn't know that my managing director or the lead dancer was a biochemist as well. So you having these conversations.
What kinds of disturbing conversations?
Sarape, sombrero, laziness. I didn't encounter any questions personally about the flu, but just stereotypical questions.
What does Capuli Danza Mexicana dance? What do you dance?
Oh,
do you dance?
Well, we're here in New York City. We do Mexican folkloric dance. We're trying to push and encourage the support of all Mexican-American artists, but always based on our roots and what we do.
Ambassador?
Yes.
Maybe it's important to recall why Cinco de Mayo is important here in the United States, so important here in the United States. We should remember that 147 years ago, the Mexican army outside the city of Puebla defeated the French army in 1862. The reason I'm highlighting this is because the general was commanding the army, Ignacio Zaragoza, was born in Texas when Texas was part of Mexico. Does the Mexican-American communities here in the United States started celebrating, and we discussed it with our friend David Hayes Bautista, and started celebrating very strongly because it was part of their victory as well. And therefore, I do strongly believe, and I'm very grateful for this opportunity to be here with my colleagues here, because Cinco de Mayo, and we heard what President Obama said yesterday in the White House, talking about neighborhood, talking about respect, talking about sharing responsibility. Cinco de Mayo brings us the opportunity to remember that we are neighbors, that these are shared experiences, and that the future is about a diverse world, and we should embrace that diversity, and we should work together to create bridges so we can assimilate people and we can really bring together this community.
We've got about 3 minutes left, excuse me, and if this is democracy's living room, who came to say something that didn't get said? What haven't we talked about that anybody just wants to raise? Brother Joel.
I just want to say that everybody is talking about the recession. Still, we have recession everywhere. And I want to say that in Mexico, government was waiting to receive all the immigrants going back to Mexico because of the recession in the United States. What is happening is Mexicans didn't leave the United States. They stay here. And you know why? Employers like Mexicans, and instead of giving them laid off, they are staying and they are keeping them because they are good workers.
Are people going back? I know a lot of communities are talking about reverse immigration. You don't see it. Maria, you do see it? You do see reverse immigration right now?
I've heard stories. Of course, I've heard stories. I don't think that, you know, we're talking about millions upon millions of people. So if you have a few stories where some people are going back, the reality, as Brother Joel is saying, is that Mexicanos have become a part of who we are in this city and in this country. And I suppose one thing that New Yorkers can do is to actually look into the eyes of the people who are serving them, who are taking care of their children, who are delivering the food.
As individual human beings.
Look into their eyes and say, I see you.
Cindy, are you seeing, Cindy Rodriguez, are you seeing reverse immigration?
Well, actually, I was just going to mention that I covered the immigration rallies on May 1st, and I spoke to a lot of people about the economy and whether they wanted to return. And I would say everyone that I spoke to said that they were staying, that they intended to stay. And, you know, this immigration rally was not as big as years past. But I would also just want to add that back in 2006, when I was covering the immigration rally, it was much more of a movement. There were hundreds of thousands of people all over the country. Someone said to me back then, you know, I think New York City will have a mayor of Mexican descent before it has a mayor of Puerto Rican descent. And they were saying this
by the numbers.
Well, they were saying this because there are a lot of young people that are participating in this movement, that are becoming politically active, that are civic-minded.
30 seconds for Dr. Perez, and
yes.
Zarella will get the last word.
I just want to say something. If we really want to prevent for something happen like has been mentioned in Pennsylvania, we have to avoid intimidation. Somebody has been already said that the wonderful of this country is the diversity. And one of the things that I have been noticed is when Mexicans start coming, Spanish start flourish as a language spoken everywhere. Other communities speak their own language. We have to keep in. Carlos Fuentes has been mentioned that Mexicans never going to give up that. So I think that we have to continue doing that.
Zarella Martinez?
I think that Mexicans have certain qualities that people don't recognize. For us, like for instance, education does not mean necessarily book learning. It means having good manners, respect, dignity, and this is a way that a Mexican is brought up. And we have other beautiful characteristics like alma, our soul, and the individual qualities that everybody has. And this is a thing that when you look at a Mexican, you have to understand that we come from a different culture, but we're part of this world here too.
Zarella Martinez, Daniel Jaquez, Maria Hinojosa, Guillermo Perez-Perez, Angelo Cabrera, Joel Magallan, Cindy Rodriguez, Ruben Beltran, and Virginia Ramirez. Thank you all for joining us in the Greens Place. Happy Cinco de Mayo. And when we continue in a minute, it's the finals of the Brian Lehrer Show Satire Slam, live on stage at the Green Space.